And it is 10 a.m. You're tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. It's Wednesday. That means it's time once again for the Kenai Conversation. And today, it's all about local food on the Kenai Peninsula. And we've got some folks who are involved in that, what I'll go ahead and start calling an industry on the Kenai. We've got from Eagle Glade Farms up in Nikiski, Lou Height and Steve Dahl joining us. And also the executive chef at the Flats Bistro in Kenai, Ken Hines. Thank you all so much for joining us this morning. Tons to talk about. We want to get the numbers out as soon as we can. 690-1687. If you would like to jump in on the conversation, if you've got questions about where to get local foodstuffs, if you're a grower, if you're a producer, if you're a consumer, if you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. 690-1687. And Ken Hines, executive chef at the Flats Bistro in Kenai, is really excited to have you on the program because you come at this from kind of the opposite angle, and you're on the more of the consumer side of things, and you're looking at folks who are doing stuff locally and wondering how you can integrate that into your menu at the restaurant. And give us a little bit of your background. How did you get involved? I mean, I know that local foods has been a thing that you've been involved with in other jobs and other places around the country, but give us a little bit of a background on how you came to get involved in it and why you kind of go out of your way to find some of this stuff.
Well, growing up, my grandparents had a large garden and chicken coops, and you know, they focused on, you know, feeding us properly. And I can remember as a child, you know, playing around in the garden beds. My father always had tilled yard and what have you. So, you know, it was kind of a norm growing up. And then as I got into the culinary world, I moved to California, and it's just flourished out there. I mean, you can't, as Lou said, you could put anything in the ground and it'll grow. It doesn't matter. So I was quite spoiled out there. And then, you know, I moved to North Carolina, and their local life was very different because they had to work a little bit harder at it than people in California did. So, you know, they utilized what was also grown around the area foraged-wise as well, too, which is kind of what I want to bring back to here, is what we had originally been eating as homesteaders in this area. You know, so foraging spruce tips, morel mushrooms are big right now. You know, being able to utilize all of the buds and the seeds and things like that that are grown here naturally. You know, I've always had an affinity for, you know, fresh food, especially being in the culinary world. That's what it is. You know, the fresher, the better. And the people that put that hard work in, you know, on a smaller scale, like the folks here, you know, I want to give back to them and the community as well, too.
What's the difference when you're talking about running a kitchen and making plans for menus and costs and all that? What's the difference between being able to work face-to-face with the folks who you're getting product from and, you know, just making a call and marking it on the order sheet every week?
Well, diversity is kind of a big thing, and it allows me to be creative as well, too. When, you know, Lou comes in the back door and she says, I have, you know, fresh garlic, it's going to be phenomenally better than garlic that's going to come from anywhere else down in the lower 48 that's been shipped up here. So that gives me kind of the room to grow creatively as well, too. And not just, like you say, check off an order sheet and it comes in, you know, every single day, or cooking out of a box or a can. It's like some of that stuff makes me cringe, you know, tremendously.
Absolutely. I remember I've spent some time working in the restaurant business in various degrees, and I was surprised at how, of course, you spend tons of time as a entry level prep cook chopping stuff. I was also surprised at how much time you spent opening number 10 cans of stuff.
Yeah.
So I feel like any effort you can avoid doing that, you know, the end product's going to be a lot better.
I agree 100%.
And I wanted to get back. Ken was mentioning garlic, and you guys, what else is growing out at Eagle Glade Farms? What are you focused on, and why did you choose to focus on those things?
We've chosen to focus on garlics and onions because we love garlic and onion. Other people love garlic and onion.
I do.
And they grow well out here with relatively little extra care. They don't require a high tunnel. They don't require, they require some feeding. We use compost, just finishing up a huge pile of compost at horse manure.
That's the dirty work, right? That's the dirty side.
It's truly the dirty work. And we also compost waste from a brewery that's near us.
Mm-hmm.
We also, today I'm going to be planting about 200 pounds of potatoes. A little bit late, but we had to do some serious ground preparation because we opened some new field this year.
How's the growing season been this year? It felt like spring kind of, it still doesn't feel totally quite like summer's all the way here yet. We're kind of dragging our feet through spring. How's the season been going so far? You mentioned a little bit late on potatoes, but timelines for other things is okay or a little behind?
They're all a little behind because we grow almost everything outdoors.
Yeah.
I had a bed of salad. I grow a mixed salad that's fairly popular. And I lost my first planting because we had that sudden cold snap and all that wind. That happens. That's farming.
Yeah.
But I have two new beds of mixed salad that have come up and are starting to make their second leaf. So I'll be planting two more this weekend, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We've got the potatoes. We've got some asparagus beginning to come up. Now, asparagus is a perennial, and I planted 250 crowns, roots of asparagus, a couple of weeks ago, but it's going to take about 2 years before they're really edible. Several flats of cabbage and Brussels sprouts and things like that. Broccoli went in the ground last weekend. So
things are really booming. Mm-hmm. Things are really happening.
Yeah, and regarding the weather, if we look back 10 years, this is just about the way the weather was. We've gotten very spoiled over 10 years of warming. And, last year was a very early, very warm spring. This is a much more typically Alaska spring.
Yeah. Steve, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned you guys have been at this and growing this operation for going on 10 years now. And I'm curious, you know, looking back, how things have changed. There are several farmers markets on the Kenai Peninsula that weren't here 10 years ago. The community-supported agricultural program is growing, and that probably, I wasn't here 10 years ago, but I'm going to guess there wasn't that necessarily that program or at least that robust of a program. The Kenai Peninsula Food Hub is a new tool that we'll talk about a little bit. But what are some other things that have changed over the last 10 years that you can point to as, wow, this is a thing that's really happening?
In general, people want good food. And if they got to pay a premium price, the less distance it has to travel, the better. I mean, you know, when you think about it, you know, which would you prefer, a bag of spuds that came from Maine or from 5 miles off? That concept in general is growing. The number of people that I've talked to, oh, I'm going to try this, and plant these in these buckets and see what happens. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Well, you know, when you look at the infamous potato king, Mr. Burbank, that man experimented with so many different things, it's insane. But not really, because a lot of it worked, but the most of it didn't. But if you don't keep trying, you get nowhere.
Yeah.
And to me, experimenting is half the fun. But over the 10 years, one of the biggest things I've learned is, okay, you pick, I'm doing this and this and this this year. The rest of the 5,000 can sit there and wait, because it's real easy to bury yourself fast.
Yeah, when you start, if you want to have a little bit of everything, it's really easy to end up with a whole lot of nothing, I would mm-hmm. imagine. Yeah. 690-1687 is the number. If you have been experimenting in your garden, if you'd like to jump in on the conversation today, we're talking about local foods on the Kenai Peninsula and that entire movement, which has really just been booming the past few years. We've got Lou Height and Steve Dahl with us from Eagle Glade Farms up in Nikiski, and Ken Hines is with us as well. He's the executive chef at the Flats Bistro. And talking about experimentation, Steve, you've mentioned it as a thing that you get to do as a grower. And Ken, something that you get to do that in the kitchen. And again, I look back at some of my prior experience in a kitchen, and I really like to cook. When you're working in a kitchen, in a professional kitchen, one of the keys, though, a lot of times is the art of doing the same thing precisely the same way over and over and over again. How important is it to have local things to sort of choose from so that you can get out of that everyday stale menu and just play around a little bit? How important is that?
It's extremely important. I mean, for growth across the board, for both farmers and for us, because the more that we can do and showcase in the kitchen, the more that they can do out in the field. So if they bring us something that is tremendous, we don't have to do much to it to get it to the plate for people to experience what they're actually growing out there. When you have foods that have been shipped for so long or travel for so long, you have to mask them. So you have heavy cream sauces and spicy foods, and you know, that's all well and good, but I'll take a raw turnip with a little bit of sea salt and some olive oil over all of that any day. You know, raw turnip greens, those types of things, those are, you know, the earth essentially is what you're eating. And, you know, what we breathe and what we eat every single day around us needs to be, you know, in our food on a daily basis.
And it seems like you can get that. I'm trying to gauge sort of what's driving things here on the Kenai. Are we getting to a point where the demand for new things is driving what people are putting into the ground, or people are still discovering what farmers are growing?
Well, I think it's discovery is a lot of it right now. I mean, from what I see, and I haven't been here, you know, very long, but from what I've seen in this short period of time is that people are looking for something new. You know, they're more hip to what is going on with their food. They want to know where it comes from, what it eats, you know, how it's prepared or how it's slaughtered, what have you, you know, coming to us. Because you can see now the difference between something that's been shipped up here and has been on a truck for a week and something that has been, you know, picked and given to me or the restaurant or restaurants around here 5 hours before.
Yeah. And Lou and Steve, to you guys as farmers, I'm curious, for the farming community, for lack of a better term, how is it like kind of a club where you guys kind of try to, what are you up to this year and what are you trying to do this year? And do you keep abreast of what other folks are playing with and trying to do? Steve's got a big smile on his face.
It's kind of like a complete set of secrets. Nobody really talks about what they're done, what really works. It's kind of like, I'm doing this and you're doing that and we're all happy.
Yeah. Oh, we got our favorite Wednesday morning theme song coming over right now.
This is a test. That's right. This is a test of the whatever.
And thanks for sticking with us again, talking about local foods on the Kenai Peninsula. And Steve, you talked about this idea that you want to, is it, I guess there's maybe some sort of market advantage to keeping things a little under wraps so that maybe you can come out to it, you know, in the fall one year and say, hey, I got this, whatever this might be. And it really worked out well. So who's going to be in line for this in the next year? Is that kind of how it is?
Yeah. You always have copycats.
Yeah.
And it comes down to, okay, we did this first. They did that first. They're happy with what they're doing. We're happy with what we're doing. And it's kind of like the difference between two different makes of cars.
Yeah.
You don't know what the new ones are going to look like until the day they come out on the floor.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about, you know, kind of the business side. Of course, you guys work with Ken a lot at the restaurant. But mm-hmm. What are some other sources for customers for Eagle Glade Farms?
We use the Kenai Peninsula Food Hub a lot.
Yeah.
Haven't listed anything this year because it's a late year.
Yeah.
I have done farmers markets, and they're fun, but since it's just Steve and me, I can't always afford the, you know, a farmers market may be open for 6 hours, but then there's 4 hours of picking and processing and 4 hours of setting up and 4 hours of takedown, so it's a full day that I'm not tending to things that need to be tended on the farm. So I don't do farmers markets a lot.
Yeah. And speaking of I wanted to talk about the food hub, because this is a pretty new thing here on the Kenai Peninsula. It's a way, and I'll try to, if I can pull up the website here, a way for local consumers to connect with local producers of local food products, value-added stuff, jams, jellies, fresh stuff all over the place. And it's a way to come and see what everybody's got basically online. And I guess maybe you could explain a little bit about the process and how that works for a producer to get stuff online and showcase your products.
Well, I've got I try to take a good photograph of whatever is growing. There is a computer program. It's run through a computer.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't know about the Food Hub, the way I usually explain it is that it's an online farmers market where you can go online during the ordering period and you order your lettuce from Larry and your melons from Mary and your cucumbers from Carrie and pay for it all at once with one credit card purchase. And on pickup day, you go over to the Lutheran Church at the Y and pick up your box. It's very simple. It's very convenient for people who can't make it to a farmer's market.
The convenience is like such a key word there, because I feel like, you know, I was walking around the grocery store just this morning, and every once in a while when I'm walking around the store, it will strike me that this is one store and I've got a gazillion choices here, and this is just one store. There's three more, half a dozen more like it in town, times all over the country, all this stuff in a store. So how important is that convenience aspect that people can go and just take care of it all at once?
It's very important to probably most people.
Yeah.
You know, shopping at a farmer's market requires a time commitment too. And you may find, because of the season, you may find five booths that all have tomatoes or five booths that all have lettuce. And it's a lot of work. The Food Hub is designed to make it convenient and easy to get your locally produced groceries, which you usually can't in a regular grocery store. Not all regular grocery stores refuse to carry them, but they're hard to get.
Yeah.
And you know, when people want to make that extra commitment to get the freshest local food that they can, the Food Hub is really convenient. And I'm going to turn this over to Steve because he works intimately with the Food Hub.
Let's hear it, Steve.
Well, I don't know about that part. I'm the site manager of the Soldotna Food Hub.
Okay.
Later today, I'll be there with the deliveries, a lot of which are still coming up from Homer, because Homer's a different growing zone. They get an earlier start than we do.
Absolutely.
And Homer has a huge variety all the way around. And for a place like Homer, it's exceptionally nice, because Homer is basically a food desert. You go to one or two places to go grocery shopping, end of story. Here, we've got a bunch.
Right.
That's all we need, a bunch. And if it weren't for the food market, the farmer's market in Homer, and the Food Hub, Soldovia, which is a part of the Food Hub also, would be completely left out, because then you'd have to get on the ferry, go across, go to the farmer's market, go to the grocery store, be disappointed, mm-hmm. come back to the ferry, and go back home. For Soldovia, then place the orders and a couple coolers are put on the ferry and they go over to the other side and everybody runs around and picks it up. They're happy. Up here, it's convenience. It's a lot of convenience for a lot of people. And the tried and true regulars that we have and that we are in the process of developing love it, because it's really nice, fresh food. It looks good. It always looks good. And it's convenient. They didn't have to walk up and down the promenade for an hour finding it.
Right.
And people like that. People like that a lot.
I'm curious, you know, one of the great things about a farmer's market is that face-to-face interaction and the idea that you get to actually speak with the person who not only grew this, but who picked it, who brought it here. They can tell you everything about this one particular plant, literally from seed to when I'm handing it over to you. With something like the Food Hub, magnifies how many people this can serve enormously and makes it really convenient. Does it change that interaction with you and your customers in a noticeable degree, or does it just work because this is what people want?
I think it works because it's what people want. People can contact us, and people do. And when I run into regular people who buy regularly from me, we'll stop and we'll talk about food until we both have to go do our regular work. But, you know, convenience is really important. And people, you know, if somebody wants to come out and see me, you know, see what we're doing and how we're doing it, they're more than welcome. Just call ahead.
Yeah. What's the number out there at Eagle Glade Farms?
227-1813.
227-1813. That's the number for Eagle Glade Farms, where you guys are growing garlic, onions, a lot of stuff. And what's interesting is I'm curious what kind of planning went into this and what the forethought was, because garlic and onions, as you mentioned, you know, you put some thought into what could we grow outside, what would stand up to the Alaskan climate. And it's also a very marketable product for restaurants. You know, onions and garlic can hang around for a while. They're relatively shelf stable. I'm curious what kind of work went into sort of the business plan and how you decided on what you were going to grow and how you were going to sell it and those sorts of things.
Well, during the 10 years between buying the property and actually starting to farm it, because we had to clear woods and build up soil.
Right.
We spent some time looking for what would grow here. Things that would grow that are very special and relatively high value. We also grow the stuff that we like. One way that we measure our success is, can we feed ourselves off the farm? If we can feed ourselves and 100 other families, then we are very successful.
And very productive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it only takes a tiny space to feed a whole lot of people. How many people did your granddad feed during World War II?
I don't remember the exact number. I do know that his garden was 5 acres. And there were a lot of people in the neighborhood that came around regularly. They planted, they hoed, they picked, and they enjoyed. And as my grandfather said, he may be Quaker, he may not believe in war, he may not believe in killing, but he did believe in eating, and he didn't see any reason why not to help the neighbors eat too.
And everybody wins.
Yeah.
And everybody wins. 690-1687 is the number if you would like to jump in on the conversation this morning. We're talking about local foods and all of the things that brings with it here on the Kenai Peninsula, the way that this sort of industry has been growing over the past few years. Again, 690-1687. We'd love to hear from you. Are you growing stuff? Are you selling stuff? Are you looking to buy stuff? Hey, we'd love to hear about all of it here on the conversation. We talked a little, Ken, getting back to you and the restaurant and this idea of experimentation, we will get to in just a second because we have a caller. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation. Who's this?
This is Penny from Soldotna.
Oh, hi, Penny.
Hi. I just wanted to thank the panel who's there today because the sustainability effort on the Kenai Peninsula is outrageously awesome. And I like the fact that we have the food hub for people who go to the food hub, and I'm on my way to doing that. And I also like that we have the Saturday and the Wednesday markets because there are people who don't want to go to the food hub or don't go to the food hub because they don't want to. So I like that we have farms we can stop at. We have people who do the food hub because the food is amazing. And we have people who come out and help those people who don't necessarily know how to go online and so forth. So I just want to applaud you all for what you're doing and how you're changing the community and the social structure and the eating structure of people on the Kenai Peninsula. I don't have any questions because you're doing it all right.
Well, beautifully said.
Thank you.
Are welcome.
Thank you so much for that call, Penny. I have a question for you.
Okay.
Is there anything, as someone who buys a lot of local foods, is there anything that you would like to see on the Food Hub list or something available that's not right now that maybe folks are, as Steve would say, secretly working on for future growing seasons?
Oh, wow. Boy, we have the apples covered. We have onions and potatoes and carrots. Well, I love blueberries, but I go pick those, and I don't want you guys to do that because I won't go pick them. I don't know. I think we do it really well. I think the most important thing to me is that we help provide the access and the knowledge to people so that they know that this is there. Last year, I believe, was the first time the Food Hub began, or maybe it was earlier and I was unawares, but I think that accessibility for people of all ages, young and old, to me is the most important thing. I love the food that they bring up here because my daughter gets it and I sort of borrow some of it.
Well, Penny, thank you so much for that call. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you. Have a good day as well.
And that's a pretty solid endorsement, I think, of the efforts of the three of you and everyone else who's working on this kind of thing.
Well, thank you.
And with that, we are to the bottom of the hour. We will take a short break. I'm going to grab a little bit more coffee, but we hope you will stick around and join us for the second half of the program coming up in just a little bit. And welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. It's the Kenai Conversation. This morning, it's all about local foods on the Kenai Peninsula. This is, I'll go ahead and call it an industry now that has just been booming the last few years, seen tremendous growth relative to other parts of the state. You know, you think about Alaska, you think about the Matsu Valley up towards Delta Junction, those being kind of the agricultural centers of Alaska, such as Alaska as an agricultural center. But slowly, I feel like we're seeing that shift a little bit to the Kenai Peninsula. The weather's changed a little bit. We've got a friendlier growing season. A lot of programs to help folks out. You think about the assistance programs that are available for folks who want to put up greenhouses and things like that. There's a lot of ways to do it, and we're seeing more and more ways all the time to market the things that folks are able to grow. And we're so happy this morning to have with us Ken Hines in the studio. He's the executive chef at the Flats Bistro in Kenai, and also Lou Height and Steve Dahl. They run Eagle Glade Farms up in Nikiski. And over the break, we were it's kind of hard. You get a room full of people who are into growing and cooking and eating food, and it's hard not to start talking about ingredients and recipes. And I'm curious, you know, not everybody is a foodie. Not everybody goes to the grocery store and can't wait to see what new thing is in season. You know, they've got their standbys, and they're happy with that, and that's fine. What advice would you give for folks who are trying to make maybe a little bit of a change, whether they just want to eat locally, whether they want to eat a bit more healthy? What would you say to folks who could, because it can be a little bit intimidating. I don't, you know, confit a duck, what does that even mean? I don't want to do any of that. But so how do you take away the intimidation factor for folks who maybe haven't explored this area a whole lot of fresh and local food and seasons and all that kind of thing?
Well, I think you start on an easy level. You know, vegetables is a really easy level. Confit and duck, that's kind of the the advanced side of it. But, you know, instead of buying the bag of mixed, already pre-cut vegetables, bring, you know, those vegetables home whole and then cut them yourselves. Then you can see the flavor profiles of them. You see the structure of them and how they change, you know, instead of something that's been pre-cut and sat in a bag for who knows how long.
Yeah, and you know, when we're talking about in Alaska, a lot of times that could be maybe even a couple of weeks from the time it was picked until right. The time it gets here. And that's for us on the road system, lucky us on the road system. For the folks out in the bush, it can be an even longer wait. We're going to go back to the phones. And good morning. Welcome to the conversation. Who's this?
Heidi.
Good morning, Heidi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Did you have a question?
Yeah, there's a delay. I need to turn my turn my speaker down. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Welcome to the show, Heidi.
Yeah, thanks. Great show, and I just wanted to share something for people who might be new to the community or visiting this summer, because I think there's some great tie-ins between the visitor industry and our booming local food, and we'll see that at the restaurants. But we do have a Kenai local food directory that has been put together for several years now by Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District and Kenai Local Food Connection. And one could find that very brightly colored directory with all sorts of tips on where to find locally grown, locally foraged, locally harvested fish, etc. And you can find that online at kenailocalfood.org or at your local visitor center or the library in many locations around town.
And Heidi, I'll take a second just to identify you. This is Heidi Che from the Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District. And unfortunately, Heidi couldn't join us in the studio this morning, but we're so happy to have you with us on the phone. We were talking, Heidi, a bit earlier about the Kenai Food Hub, and I was hoping you could weigh in on that and how that has only been around, this is the second year, but are you seeing it change sort of the demand or the way that people are having expectations of how food can be delivered and worked with here on the Kenai?
Well, it's an exciting project, and buying online is kind of the newest up-to-date thing. My hope is that it reaches people who wouldn't otherwise take the time to go to the farmer's market. We've got really fantastic farmer's markets on the central Kenai Peninsula, and we have a whole bunch of them. So I think everybody's got their best channel for finding local food, whether it's the farm in your neighborhood that's offering a weekly subscription service, or the farmers markets, which are all opening the first week of June, by the way, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday, and the Food Hub is yet another option.
And Heidi, before we let you go, I'd like to ask you. You know, you've been kind of behind the scenes and working with this local food movement for some time, and I'm just curious what you see the next few years bringing. I feel like it can only kind of grow and get better from here. But what's your sense of how things will go in the next few years?
Well, that's my sense. My sense is that people are, that we've got a lot of startup businesses here. I've seen some of them, like Eagle Glade Farm, through all the phases from the very beginning, now just starting to blossom, and I see many more small farms in that process. So I think we can expect this to continue to grow, and it's very exciting that our restaurants are catching on. We had some great networking events this winter, and it was very clear that there are an increasing number of great chefs who really want to make use of these locally available materials, food, wonderful food. I guess another exciting development, I think, is that people, you know, we started on our Kenai comprehensive planning process, and already the borough, which paid very little attention in its last comprehensive plan to agriculture, has already recognized that this is an important part of our economy and our quality of life and our livelihood that we need to think about and plan for the future. We need to think about where, you know, our model here is micro farm. It's often 5 acres or less, but it can be very intensive, very productive. What kind of facilities are necessary to help that industry grow and thrive? And where, you know, what valuable lands do we have that we need to preserve for that purpose, looking way down the road?
Well, Heidi Che, again, with the Kenai Soil and Water Water Conservation District, thank you so much for giving us a ring today, Heidi. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Take care. Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you so much. And you know, Heidi brings up an interesting point talking about the Kenai Comprehensive Plan and the idea that the role that agriculture plays in the Kenai's economy is changing, and folks are starting to recognize that. So I guess for Lou or Steve, from the farmer's perspective, from the producer's perspective, what are things that you would like to see when we're talking about things like a comprehensive plan? What are some things that would maybe, shorten the barriers to entry or make it a little bit easier for you to grow or make your business more dynamic? What would you like to see for something like a comprehensive plan when it comes to local agriculture?
Well, one important thing, and I know it's been discussed, is preservation of farmland. We've got 30-acre patch surrounded by a gravel pit and a whole lot of houses. And fortunately, it isn't a problem. But people look at their land and they see it as an investment. And in other places, there have been problems with farmers who fertilize with manure because the housing development next door thinks it stinks. We need to think ahead about what's going to happen when we have a farm here and a farm there and a farm someplace else. And lots of houses. I was involved some years ago in an effort to try to stop a gravel pit that is within shooting distance. It's actually within rock throwing distance if you're a really good rock thrower. Because a gravel pit, it's a legitimate business, and the man owns his land and he has a right to develop it as he wants to, but we had to hold his feet to the fire about how far down he was going to dig, because we didn't want stuff to get into the groundwater that we're going to be watering edible plants with.
Right. Those are the sorts of things that when you talk about a comprehensive plan and thinking about the future and how development will happen in parts of the Kenai that are to this point relatively undeveloped. I mean, even if there's gravel pits in a lot of houses, there hasn't been maybe necessarily a ton of planning, especially if you're talking about an area like Nikiski or like Sterling, where things are a lot looser there, which is great. That's a big reason why a lot of us are here. but then how do we work together to continue to make these sorts of things possible? Yeah.
Shaylin, I'm going to be a little bit meaner. Development on the Kenai Peninsula has been very helter-skelter. Planning has been done with kind of tunnel vision as to heavy oil support industry, fishing, and hunting. And if you can kind of squeeze in between the lines drawn around those, you can do anything you want to. And anything you want to is not really a good idea. Right now, there would be nothing to keep me from putting a truck terminal next to a $1 million fishing lodge. And people need to start thinking about that as we fill up, because a $1 million fishing lodge and a truck terminal need a lot of the same services.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we continue to fill up, you know, as folks come in from the outside, Ken, I wanted to get back to you and get kind of maybe a little bit of an outsider's perspective. You, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, you've traveled around, you've done some consulting work in Alaska, you've worked in California, North Carolina, different places that are sort of at different levels of this local food movement. What was your, I guess we'll go back and I think it's all right to let folks know that you helped when the Flats opened, you worked with them doing some consulting work. What were some of your initial impressions of sort of what was available here in terms of local foods, local farming, and how has that changed in the few years since?
Well, when I first got up here, we had, you know, the same mission that we have today. You know, was we wanted to utilize what was grown around this area and what is naturally grown around this area. You know, our mark hasn't changed, but the area has changed tremendously. I feel within the last three years since I've been here, you know, there's more farmers that want to be engaged with us and what we're doing and more interested in what we have to offer at the restaurant, as well as what they have to offer to us as well, too. You know, so we are on the cusp right now, big time.
We talked a little bit earlier about this idea that, you know, not everybody is a total foodie. But obviously more and more people are getting into it because we keep seeing businesses expand. There are more opportunities for folks to buy locally grown products and sort of expand their palates, if you will. I'm curious, Ken, have you seen that change just in maybe in your customers' desires for what they want to see on the menu? Are they demanding local stuff? Are they demanding more variety?
Not much of a demand, so to speak, you know, but I think people are very interested.
Yeah. If it's there, they're interested.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that we have more outlets for people to see that as well, too, with the food hub, with the farmers markets, you know, where they go and they see Eagle Glade Farms out at the farmers market, and then they see it also on the menu that we're using as well, too. They're more inept to, you know, support them and support this sustainability of local life.
Sustainability, a big key. And Lou, I wanted to get back to you because, you know, Nikiski especially is an area that, you know, there are a lot of questions up in the air about how that place is going to develop. You talk about things like the AKLNG project. Let's pretend that that is actually going to go through and happen. That's a huge investment in that area. It's certainly going to mean a lot more people there, a lot more infrastructure, all those sorts of things. You touched a little bit on kind of those neighbor-to-neighbor interactions, but I guess I'd ask you kind of regionally, what are some of your concerns about keeping this kind of thing sustainable and making sure that it's able to continue to grow over the long term?
Well, in the Nikiski area particularly, I really hope to see a lot of thinking and planning going into how things are developed. The road out to Nikiski is not very beautiful. But the industrial services need to be there. The decision has been made to place the LNG plant where they're going to place it. I think they were a little premature in buying a whole lot of people out, but I'm not a gas marketer, so I don't know for sure. I do read Larry Persily's newsletter every time it comes out.
Sure.
And for those that don't know, it's something the borough puts out with information about the natural gas market. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, Larry's been covering that stuff for a long time. We had him on the show just last week. He's a great resource when it comes to how things like that are going to play out. And then, you know, for folks who live in the area, it's important to keep ahead of that information so that you can make informed decisions, I suppose.
It really is. You know, they've got 800 acres planned for the gas plant, but the plant itself, the footprint is very tiny. Most of that's buffer. What I'd like to see is that buffer area, which is going to have to be pretty much clear cut so they can keep an eye on it, turned into agricultural land. In reaching back to Delaware, which is where a lot of our experience comes from, there is a buffer area around a major refinery on the Delaware River that grows commodity crops. And it's been there for, gosh, longer than I know about it. And that's how they keep that area cleared, and that's how they keep it used. It's not just wasteland turned into gravel and kind of torn up and thrown away.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I would imagine that's something that folks here could think a lot about, because we tend to think of Alaska as this big, wide open spaces with plenty of wild land, but how you use it and being able to sort of, I would describe that as sort of doubling up the use. You have this buffer zone between this very necessary industrial facility, but you're using that instead of just as a forest of trees so you can't see the silly thing. You're using it for something more productive. And I have to imagine that is something that's really on your mind a lot in terms of sustainability. And again, this idea that if we plan for it right, this can grow. How would you like to see agriculture on the Kenai over the next, say, 10 years? I mean, right now it's a very small part of the economy, but would you like to see it become more of an economic force? Would you like to see people just more aware of it so that they're more food secure? How would you like to see the industry kind of develop over the next 10 years, we'll say?
All of the above.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All of the above, 100%.
You made a comparison to the Matsu a little while ago. Mm-hmm. Most of the agricultural in the Matsu is commodity crops. It's industrial-sized potatoes. It's, truckloads of iceberg lettuce and things like that. What we're doing here in the peninsula is more artisan farming. And I don't think that we really ought to even try to compete in the commodity crop market, probably for 30 or 40 years.
I agree with that 100%. I think we need to think locally first, and then we can act more globally, so to speak. Alaska has a lot of land. It's five times the size of Texas with less than 1 million people in it. So we're thinking hyper locally. So what we can grow and what we have on the peninsula is better and more than anything else, I think, in the Alaskan area. We have better grow seasons, deeper forests with more foraged goods in it as well too, more of a flourishing area here in the peninsula than I think anywhere else in Alaska.
The foraging aspect is something that is really coming to the fore. It's something we're hearing more and more about. In fact, if folks were listening, Jenny Nyman this just very recently had a show about going out morel hunting. It's morel season. The spruce tips are starting to pop. They're here. What are some other, because, all right, for me personally, my knowledge of foraging on the Central Peninsula pretty much begins and ends with morels, spruce tips, and berries. Right. That's kind of it. But what else is out there? If you're looking for stuff for the kitchen at the flats, what are you looking for, and how do you use it?
I'm pretty much looking for anything that's edible at this point. I walk through the woods and I pick it up, and if it doesn't look too aggressive, I'll put it in my mouth, I'll eat it, and if it tastes green, it tastes green, But, I don't encourage people to do that, please.
this is the dangerous side of
exactly,
being a chef.
Yeah. Don't just pick things up and eat them, please. But, there's a lot of interesting things. Lamb's quarter lettuce is another one that grows out here. And that's the great thing about this area is we have a lot of greenery. So things that grow on the forest floor that are, not extremely palatable can be mixed within certain things to make them palatable.
Is it difficult to market those things? Because, just from a pure kind of number standpoint, the fact is if you can go out into the forest and pick something up and it's free, hey, that's great for your bottom line. Is it tough to then sell these as kind of new products? Is there some marketing wizardry that has to go on?
There's not really much marketing going on. We pick small amounts. Morels are right now in abundance, so we have a little bit more than normal. But, we just try to utilize them throughout the menu and show people that we have, things that have been grown or picked or harvested hours before that come into a dish, and then see if they can try to pick it out, and then it enhances everything that we're doing. And that's what I'm trying to do here is kind of enhance upon what people have already been eating around here on a smaller level so that we can ease into this. Because if I just start putting lamb's quarter lettuce on the menu, people are not going to know what it is. And
yeah,
you know, nobody's really going to eat it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we've got lamb's quarters. We've got baby nettles. We've got dandelion greens. Yes. We've got sorrel, sheep sorrel, or field sorrel.
Yeah, there's a lot of greenery that grows around this area. That's very, very delicious.
Oh, beach peas, which are a little hard to get because they come on at dip net season.
Fireweed shoots and
And see, already in just a few seconds, you guys have given me all sorts of new things that I did not know I could go out, and if I see them and learn to identify them correctly, that I could go out and eat. So that's another resource that is, it's interesting that as this local food movement continues, that that's kind of an aspect of it too. It's not just what people are able to manipulate out of the ground. It's it's kind of everything.
Well, these resources, interesting enough, have been here before we have, you know, so that's... At the flats, that's what I want to focus on, is kind of moving, you know, into our previous generations' eating habits, because that's what sustained them before there was roads or, you know, freight that was able to be trucked up here.
Right.
So to be able to utilize those things for us at the restaurant, it's great because we don't have to pay for them. You know what I
mean? Sure.
But I also want people to understand that there's an effort made for the bettering of their health in that right. You know what I mean? So I don't want to be able to just open a can or a box, like I said before. I want to go out and, you know, dig the earth up and then be able to put that on the plate.
And we've got
there's some food anthropology here too.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the native population survived very, very well on the stuff that just grows here without any of the introduced European foods that the dominant population likes.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to look, and survived and thrived for a very long time.
Long time.
Yeah. We've got just about a minute left, and I just wanted to quickly go down the line and see, get a kind of a sense of something that the three of you are excited to see in terms of something new. We were talking a little bit before the show about a popcorn that you're trying, Steve, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us just briefly about that, and then I'd like to hear from the rest of you something that's maybe unique and different and exciting that you're hoping somebody can pull off on the peninsula.
Hmm. The Himalayan pink hull popcorn. Very short season. Doesn't even make a really large ear. It's only 4 or 5 inches long. But it'd be kind of nice if it makes it.
Yeah.
And if it does, great. If not, well, maybe in 10 years.
Yeah. Lou, what's something you'd like to see somebody get to take off?
Oh, I'm going to talk about something that is taking off, I think. Last year, we grew some yellow Indian woman beans. Very short season dry bean. And the good folks down at Ionia, we gave them some seeds, and they were able to pull off a good crop. We weren't. So we're going to keep working with Ionia to see if we can't get a good crop of those yellow beans.
And what a fantastic sort of stock that would be to be able to grow that here. And Ken, again, just quickly to wrap up, what's something that you're looking forward to? Have you heard somebody working on something or trying to coax something out that would be a little unique?
Anything fresh for me really is unique at this point. You know, when I first came up, it was a lot of, like I said, shipped in goods and freighted. So anything that's grown locally, and I encourage anybody out there that is growing anything to come see me at the flats, and, you know, hopefully we can make something work.
Yeah, and we're just about out of time, but I want to remind folks that we talked a lot about the Kenai Food Hub. KenaiFoodHub.org is a place where you can go online to connect with farmers and see what they're producing. But I wanted to thank everyone for being in this morning. Lou Height, Steve Dahl, Ken Hines, thank you all so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking us.
And thank you, everyone who called. Thanks for tuning in this morning. This has been the Kenai Conversation. We'll have links to all this information on our website, kdll.org, and you can catch the entire conversation there a little bit later on today as well. That'll do it. This has been the Kenai Conversation. I'm Shaylin Cochran. Have a great day.